Moncrief on News Talk.
Joanna Fortune joins us once again for parenting. Good afternoon, Joanna.
Afternoon, Sean.
Right. Okay. First question is this. We have a 2-year-old boy and a 6-month-old girl. Our little boy attends creche 5 days a week until 3 p.m. He seems very happy there and drop-offs are usually very easygoing and he doesn't get upset. We have been told he has started hitting and kicking out at kids there. He's usually very relaxed and calm and this is very out of character. His bedtime story has gone very much off the rails recently and he's not asleep until 9 most nights. We have been letting him sleep until he wakes up in recent weeks, which can be between 6:45 and 8 a.m. He's been sick recently and he's been waking at night and ends up in bed with his dad. He gets loads of fresh air in the evenings, running around after a ball, reads books with us, lots of time together. He does hit out at the dog sometimes and can be a bit forceful with the baby at times. We are using gentle with him as an alternative and show him gentle hands and then getting him to do it too. In the moment, it seems to work and he hugs the baby and gives the dog gentle rubs. He's very taken with his sister and he's very kind to her and includes her and the dog in any songs we sing or when we talk about family. But we are worried about his hitting out in creche now. He's always been such a happy, relaxed little boy. What should we do?
Do you know, he just sounds very too.
Yes.
You know, I that's the really short answer, because when you're reading that out, I'm going, fair enough. He's doing mostly well most of the time, you know, and then this is kind of context specific hiccups, I would call, you know, like there's been a new baby, massive life change for a 2-year-old. That's 6 months on the go now. Then there's, you know, he hasn't been feeling well. Anything like that is very dysregulating, especially at that age. There's been disruption to sleep routine and he's then going into creche and hitting and kicking. Like that is very context specific. And 2-year-olds, typically speaking, there'll always be the exception to the rule, but lack the verbal fluency to say, well, I'm overwhelmed by all the change in life at the moment. Yeah. I'm not feeling myself and that's triggering a whole lot of behaviours for me. But instead they use behaviour to express what they can't verbally articulate. So you're doing the right thing. You're saying, you know, gentle hands, all makes sense. He's getting it in the moment, absolutely. And then it's going straight out the window because he's 2.
Yeah.
And he's not integrating that. And actually, he needs to hear it calmly and consistently over and over and over for him to go, oh, this is a thing, this gentle thing. That's what that means. So I would add in as well with a gentle voice, so gentle yet firm, no. You want to put a no in there as well as telling him gentle hands.
Yeah.
Just so he's hearing that very clear boundary. And then you're going to do redirection and distraction, because that's all you can really do with a 2-year-old. You'll drive yourself demented trying to achieve anything else. I would also let him recover fully, reestablish the routine that was previously there regarding his sleep, because none of us are great without a good night's sleep. But at 2, that's a disaster. And involve him more actively with the baby. Give him a little job, even if it's that he's showing a storybook or he's sharing a teddy, something small, but give him a little job with the baby as well. And give this a couple of months just to work itself out. I know that sounds ages, but if you give him kind of 6 to 8 weeks to, once he's fully recovered and you get that routine back, he should settle back into how he was beforehand.
Yeah. It'll just take him a while.
It really will just take him. I mean, there's no good time, you know, for things, but he's had this new baby, being sick and the sleep. Like there's a whole lot going on at once.
Yeah.
You know, and be aware if in his creche as well, I don't know how 2 he is. Like, is he just gone 2 or is he a good bit 2? Has he changed room or has there been any changes in his childcare situation with regard to staffing or anything like that? That could be enough to unsettle him. The only thing I might add in, Sean, that if there is hitting and kicking, and I'm sure the creche are doing this, but you could ask them, could they track it as a pattern? Is it coming into nap time or has he dropped a nap? Is it where it used to be? Is it when ahead of meal times? Could he be getting hungry? Is it with a particular child? Could they be watched and see what's going on with them? Just to see, is there any pattern to the behaviour? But I would generally think at 2, this is very common.
Yeah. Now, he is going 5 days a week and the person also wants to know, should they keep him home from creche a day or 2 while they're on maternity leave?
I don't think there's a should about that, but the point is you could.
Yeah.
You know, so if you want to try that, certainly do. But I'm very struck by how the disruption to his routine is the first half of the letter. So if you then disrupt the routine for a little while, he's going to go a couple of days, but not every day. And then he will be going every day when maternity leave ends, whenever that is. It might be no harm the odd week to take a day or two. But I don't know that that's a should. That's something that you have to think about yourselves.
I'm worried about my sister's relationship with her three-year-old son. He has a slight disability. He's not speaking, but has great comprehension. I watched my sister with him and I felt she was quite mean to him. I know she's struggling accepting the situation as she doesn't bring him out much. What do you advise me to say to her?
Tread carefully. Tread really carefully here. What you want to do is offer her support with really genuine kindness and compassion. So don't link it to her parenting. Don't say, look, I've noticed you're being mean to your son. Can I help you? Because that's not going to land. But I think you should ask her how you can help and think of ways without asking. You know, I think actually a lot of us do know the help our family members would benefit from. Do it. You know, it could be something that you could do as well. You could spend time with him. You could take him out. You could take him to the playground or whatever is suitable, because I don't know the level of additional needs this little guy has. But you could play with him and enjoy him. And that would be a huge support for your sister. And then whatever is going on around your nephew's condition, you know, perhaps there's a support group that she could connect with and form connections with other parents who are going through what she's going through and adjusting. And don't hear this as she doesn't love her son. You know, don't make those assumptions. It could be she's having a really hard time adjusting to information and what it means for her son and his life. And what she might benefit from is genuine, authentic kindness and support.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I wonder, because she doesn't mention whether the sister has a partner or not.
No.
She might be struggling with this by herself.
And which is even more difficult. Now, all of that said, you know, children do need kindness and support in parenting too. So while his mom might be struggling, do offer the help. And then if you're feeling like, I've done that, I'm spending time with him, we're doing a lot, just weigh up, does your sister, would she benefit from you saying, look, do you need to let off steam? Do you need to talk about this? It's okay to cry and get upset. I'm here for you. And give her permission while gently bringing it to, he needs us all to step up for him now, all of us together. And you're going to we the conversation. So it's not you need to do better as his mother, but he needs all of us. Let's work on this as a team.
I have a bit of a dilemma with my ex-partner. We've two kids, 10 and 15, and have been separated 4 years. I met someone 3 years ago and then introduced them to the kids, going out to dinner, being in each other's houses, day trips, etc. As I only see the kids 3 or 4 days a week, them meeting my new partner has not been a constant. Also, their job requires for them to be away a lot of the time. But when they do visit, it's all good between everyone, and the little ones get on great with them. Now that we have decided to get married, the kid's mother is being a little difficult. She has said that my partner is a stranger to the kids, as they don't see them often enough. It couldn't be further from the truth, as everyone gets on well and chats when we're all together. Their mother has also refused to meet my partner and has asked that the little one especially be not minded by them. The little one does not open up to their mother after meeting my partner, and gives very little information for some reason, does not offer information on what we did at the weekend. And this has led the mother to the reasoning that counselling for our 10-year-old is needed. I would be a little reluctant to send my child to a therapist, as they speak openly with me and are very comfortable around my partner. I think their mother may be giving off vibes, emotional cues, which stop the children from speaking openly to her for fear of upsetting her. Any advice would be appreciated.
Oh, it's complicated. Because... you know, and look, we get one side of a conversation here and of a story, and be really mindful of that. But based on what's in this letter, what this parent has done sounds really reasonable and fair. You know, this is very balanced. I think the idea that your ex-partner and current partner would meet each other, because I do understand the children's mother saying, well, who is this person? And I don't want my children alone if I don't know them, or I perceive my children don't know them. But responding by saying, OK, let's get to know each other. Let's meet up. I think that's something that could be reiterated. It might be, I don't know, it might be best if it's just ex-partner, current partner together without, you know, this parent there. You know, but if everybody, because no matter how you look at this going forward, there is now going to be a more permanent relationship here. You're all going to be co-parenting.
Yeah.
So the only one who's going to suffer here with people not getting on and not connecting and not being curious or open to getting to know each other is the 10-year-old. It's also a 15-year-old in the mix here, but I think most of the focus is on the 10-year-old. And it's interesting that bit about the little one not opening up to their mother. Children are really perceptive. And if they perceive you're not comfortable with this person, I'm not going to talk about it because I don't want it to become a thing. Or if, with the best will in the world, any of us say to our children, so where'd you go? What'd you do? What's that person like? What happened there? And we're too interested, they immediately go, oh, no, no, no. And they're going to shut down. So don't hear that as an anxiety necessarily, but more, I don't know why you're asking me, so I really don't want to get pulled into it at all. Mm. Children are very good at that. Now, all of that said, Sean, like, look, if this parent is listening in, If the child's mother sees a need for therapy or counselling or play therapy or whatever it is, ask yourself, is there any harm in the child going for a few sessions? Because this might not be a battle to pick.
Yes.
If one parent is saying, look, I'm with my children, that you seem to have custody 50-50, give or take, you know. So if they're saying, I think the child would benefit, and you're saying, well, they're very open with me, there's a little inference of an accusatory tone there where you're like, oh, it's clearly you because we don't have that problem. I would say, oh, do you think so? Well, certainly if you think it would benefit our child, why don't we both meet with a therapist? A therapist would want to meet both parents. You both get to talk about this is how I experienced my child, hear each other out, and there might be no harm. So that could be something you could give in the hope that then you're saying, okay, and we really like for you to get to know this new person coming into our family who isn't new. They've been there 3 years, let's be honest. But I think the key is to stay calm and consistent. Don't get pulled into defensiveness because that's when things go really wrong, especially with situations like this.
Yeah. And again, it's one of those kind of gradual things, I imagine.
It is gradual. And I think sometimes you have to acknowledge somebody else's worries. Like, so if the children's mother are saying, oh, it's a stranger, and say, I can understand you saying that because you've never met this person. Mm. And, you know, that's something I'd love to change and rectify. How can we do that? So instead of saying, that's not true, saying, oh, I do understand your position. How can we change that?
Yeah. We had my goddaughter's communion last weekend, and while it was a great day, it was sort of hard to watch as a parent. My sister-in-law is mad into posting online. It really rubbed off on her children, to the point that during the meal, they each wanted to make videos and TikToks. It was like they had completely lost the ability to interact with their cousins and instead just wanted the screen. I noticed the impact it had on my two kids and felt they had more screen time that day than they usually would have in a week. We're due to go on a week-long summer holiday together this year, and now I'm worried. How do I limit screen time with my kids if their cousins are allowed and encouraged to post and scroll the whole time? It's an awkward one to overstep too, as I know my sister-in-law will get offended.
Oh, it's the little tightrope, isn't it?
Of
families together. And I think, look, all you can do, all any of us can do, is focus on your own kids.
Yeah.
You know, and hold your boundaries. And that might look and sound like saying to your brother and sister-in-law, we're practicing screen-free meals. Is that something we can collaborate on this holiday?
Mm.
You know, and you're, I'm not using that word collaborate intentionally because it's a social media thing. I'm just saying, you know, maybe use a different word there. But you know, that you're saying, look, it's something we're doing. Could you support us on that? Is it something we could do together? You're not saying, I think your kids are too much on their phone and my kids aren't allowed. You're not getting into that, but just putting a boundary around this. And if she's like, no, I'm fine with my children having phones whenever they want, then you can say, okay, we will be doing screen-free times ourselves. And then you have a decision. Do you eat together or do you not?
Yeah,
you know, that is a decision
like,
you make.
That's like if the other kid beside you is looking at a screen, how are you going
to... You're not going to manage that. And it's unrealistic to think you will. You know, it's just going to cause tension, actually. So you're looking at, okay, pick your battles. Are we going to eat together or not? How do you do this? And I think discuss in advance that your family will not use screens at, we're talking about the dinner table or wherever else it might be, that your kids are not allowed on TikTok, which includes featuring in their cousins' videos, if that's the case. And ensure there is activity enough to occupy your children. Now, all of that said, and I do think it's okay, by the way, as parents to say to be it a family member or another parent, that we say to them, look, my children are not allowed on social media. They don't have their own accounts and I'm not okay with them featuring in other videos. I just need to be clear about that. And can you explain that to your kids too? Mm. My kids will know. And then you have to reiterate that when you're away on holidays. But all of that said, Sean, best laid plans, et cetera, et cetera. You have to stay somewhat flexible when you're doing a blended family holiday like this, because you're going on holiday together. So it's not just your holiday.
Yeah.
It's not just your rules. And these things can get a bit tricky. So if it's a week long holiday, it might test your boundaries. But if you found that you had to bend quite a few of them, be very clear with your kids. This is a holiday situation.
Yeah.
And when we get home, the familiar rules apply.
Yeah.
And do stick. Don't see, oh, my goodness, they got on TikTok on holidays. Now I've lost that battle. They'll be on TikTok forever. You don't have to do that. You can really say, this is something that you're getting to do a bit more of because your cousins have it on holidays, but at home, this will not be happening.
My daughter is 7 and she's a very healthy appetite, but she tends to never stop when she's full. So if you put a mountain of food in front of her, she'll eat it. We figured this out a few years ago, so we're now always very careful with portion sizes and don't overload her plate. I'm conscious that we're coming into ice lolly and ice cream season, and it can be really hard to say no, or you've had enough without coming across as a terrible parent, causing a scene in a queue or something. What should we do? I don't want to give her a complex or anything.
Yeah, I mean, something we have to know, though, as parents, Sean, is that the word no doesn't make us a terrible parent.
Mm.
You know, it's really important, actually, in parenting. And setting and holding boundaries is essential. Our children won't thank us for them necessarily, but it does instill that safety that there is somebody here who's going to stop you in the situation getting out of control and I will keep you safe. But it's really important, particularly in general, but particularly when it comes to food, that we do this without any shame. And that might sound like, you know, we've had some snacks today, I don't want you to feel sick, or we've had, you know, we've a yummy dinner ready at home, let's not ruin our appetites with snacks. You know, that you're just being logical,
yes,
about it,
yeah,
because all of that is true. And you want to practice a bit of, like, she's only 7, you know, a bit of redirection and distraction, you know. So you could do a little bit of the healthy eating, you know, model at the table that you don't have one of those clean your plate rules. That can be, that's such a historical thing. I don't know if it's just Irish or in general, you know, clean your plate, clean your plate. Mm-hmm. And it just trained generations of us not to attune to when we're full and
yeah,
stop eating. But you could model, you know, 2/3 of the way through your meal going, how am I feeling? Okay, I think I'm ready for 2 more bites and then I'm done. If that's genuinely how you feel, you
yeah,
know, but just modeling that for her and checking in. I would rather with any child in general, but this age in particular, that you focus on increasing movement and activity, not as a weight loss strategy, but from a fitness well-being and emphasizing, look at what your body is capable of, movement for joy, movement as a playful thing to do, and avoid any emotional charge around food. That's why I was using the word, we've had snacks today, let's not ruin our dinner.
Mm.
Avoiding things like treat food, that language, because it puts a bit of a hierarchy on, oh, these foods are
absolutely
special and these
yeah,
foods are not. And all of that is placing emotional charge. She's 7. Their bodies change. This
mm,
is really normal thing to do. But what this letter is saying is that she might be struggling with just attuning to those cues in her body of, I'm full, I should stop. So you can help her with that, but don't make it about your body size is the issue.
Or you eat too much.
Absolutely,
yeah,
avoiding
yeah,
any of that.
Yeah.
So just being very mindful with the language you're using, because emotional charge around food might address one issue now, but it's going to create a myriad of other challenges for you and your daughter down the road. So I would be just putting a boundary around that we don't oversnack because we have these healthy meals and yummy meals that we're going to enjoy. Let her know that it's okay to stop eating when you're full.
Yeah,
that you can pause and that we're going to just do more movement over the summer. It's a great time to do it anyway because they're not in school. So movement declines and it is incumbent on us to keep some of that activity really there.
Absolutely. Our 11-year-old came home to us a fortnight ago after school, lamenting the fact that one of her best friends is going to the south of France on her summer holidays. She took it as a personal insult that her own family are not going on a foreign holiday this summer. Since that initial shock, further stories have emerged of her other friends also taking foreign holidays over the coming few months. She seems to find it very difficult to separate herself from the experience of her friends, and simply can't accept that we're not jetting off somewhere fancy. Each summer we go to our granny's in Offaly for a fortnight, and she honestly thinks it's the most dreadful proposition imaginable. She used to love it when she was younger, but now she's completely changed her feelings on it. How can I get her to stop comparing and make her want to do the Offaly trip instead?
I mean, we really do live in a time of comparison culture, don't we? And I don't know that you can make her want to go to Offaly and that she's comparing herself. I mean, the desire to be like your peers is really, really high at that age. Mm. And nor am I saying now this family should cancel Offaly and go book the south of France. I'm not saying that at all. But I think you can understand her coming home and saying, oh, so-and-so is going here, there and everywhere and I'm going to Offaly. And I think you don't have to denigrate poor old Offaly here, but you can say, like, you can try and look at what you know, when an 11-year-old saying, oh, this is a dreadful proposition going to Offaly, but I used to love it as a child. I immediately want to know what's changed. And could it be that there isn't enough activity for her at 11 years old in granny's house? If you're going to be down there for a week, for example, is there a camp locally that she could go for even 2-3 hours a day so that she's meeting other kids in the area, forming connections and relationships, and there's more activity? That would bring a bit of adventure and structure to the week, and it would, as opposed to, well, now what are we going to do today sitting around? And I think that could, you know, I suppose what I'm talking about is plan to have fun while you're there rather than you must want to be here. Just plan to have fun and emphasize that just like her friends, she's going to be spending her holidays having fun with her family. Your friends are going to be having fun and spending time with their families. It's just where they're doing it is different. So I do think that's all there. But I think be very empathetic that kids this age are looking to be exactly the same as all their friends. So they will come home to you and say, now, listen, she's probably sighted 3-4 kids going on these exciting foreign holidays. And there could be 10 others who are not.
Exactly.
You know, and that's what I would say is going on. But of course, she's like, well, that sounds exciting. That sounds a bit different. I think find something she's interested in and see how much you can do that in Offaly. And the other side of it is it's a family holiday. Kids do get to an age where they're going to eye roll at you and go, this is so boring. Yes. But, you know, you're there to enjoy each other and time together. So maybe bring some board games, plan some movie nights, a trip to the cinema, little things like that will actually break up the week for her.
Take that child to Leitrim. She'll never want to leave, says one texter. Yeah, Joanna, thanks a million for coming into us. Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.